Hello and welcome again to the Wide World of Wargaming Age of Sigmar podcast. As always, I am your host, Alex Gonzalez, and with me again are John and Garrett. Jeremy is out just for one more time. He just landed today in the United States after his very long reprieve in Europe. However, as those long trips tend to be, he's a little tired tonight. However, we do have most of us on. Garrett, what is on your workbench?
I've actually had a very busy workbench. I've finally been able to recover from Nova, and I'm getting back into Sigmar. And also, as with many people out here, when Nova hits and is over, people tend to go off into other directions and start playing some side games. So as far as my workbench goes, I have been building like crazy my Sylvaneth army. So I have built 20 Spite Revenants, 32 Dryads, 3 Citadel Wildwoods, 1 Awakened Wildwood, 15 Tree Revenants, 6 Kurnoth Hunters, 3 Sylvaneth Heroes, and then I've also started building my Blood Bowl team, and I've been getting back into Malifaux. So I've had a pretty busy time getting back into things. Real excited to start playing my Sylvaneth. I got a game in with them, and I'm actually really happy with how they play. I know a lot of Sylvaneth players are kind of sad with the change in the Codex, or the Battle Tome. But they are actually a faction that I kind of was really happy to get into because they're a very versatile force with, trees being able to have movement shenanigans. They can block line of sight. They have good shooting. They have good melee. They're a pretty tough army. They got some decent magic. So they got a lot of pieces. And so I found that very rewarding to be able to kind of dip my toes into every single type of strategy and try to mold into this strategy I want. So I'm really excited to get going with my Sylvaneth force. How about you, John? What have you got going these days?
Well, first off, Garrett, I am super surprised to hear about your Sylvaneth force. Didn't realize that you were going to get going that quick. Do you have 2,000 points built already then?
Oh, I got like 3,000 points built. Curse box got me a nice quick jump start.
Oh, sure.
I've actually spent very little on this army because of Loon Curse and start collecting boxes. It's actually pretty cheap to get into Sylvaneth.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to, with the free cities coming out, we'll have to see if there's a place for some of those guys next to my Stormcast. But as far as my workbench goes, first off, of course, I am enjoying a little bit of the Ain't Your Papa's Grappa, bottle 12 of 100, and I'm actually getting towards the bottom of this bottle, maybe 3 shots left in it, so I'm a little concerned. I've always been a fan of the Grappa, and this is a barrel-aged Grappa, so I've actually been out on the international market seeing if I can import a nice barrel-aged Grappa from Italy to replace this for myself. So that's immediately what's on my workbench. Other than that, I've started working again on my Eidneth Deepkin, so pulled them out. A little bit of paint has been considered as far as looking at models and seeing how I want to proceed from here. And I managed to actually get a game in with my Eidneth the Well against Mr. Bill Durrett, who I think both of you know, local 40K player. He often attends the LVO SoCal Open, playing his beautiful Space Wolves or Imperial Guard, and usually has a cool hat or helmet to match. So he is moving into the worlds of Age of Sigmar and deciding to try the Beasts of Chaos. So he hit me up for a game. It was a learning game, so no hard competition there, of course. And he brought a Beast of Chaos, he brought a Beast Lord, a Saigor, Gorgon, and 3 units of Bulgors. I myself, running Eidneth Deepkin, brought 2,000 points. So I had a Volturno, a Kellion King, 30 Thralls, 2 units of 10 Reavers, 2 units of 3 Ishilin Guard, and the Mathlan of the Sea, a Soul Scryer, and a Tidecaster, all coming from the Briamdar Enclave. And It was the, I think it's called What's Yours is Mine. No, that's not the right one. Where we start off with four objectives, and the point is to take my opponent's objectives, hold them for 3 points, and then hold my objectives as well. Diagonal deployment. Sorry.
Total commitment.
Total commitment. Thank you very much. What's yours is mine. total commitment. And what can I say? Those Bulgors, when they're properly backed up and have the buff guys running behind them, are actually pretty nasty. They come in. I think they're rerolling ones to hit on the guys with two axes at least. Sixes to wound cause mortal wounds. So there's some pretty nice mechanics. And he was running some big blocks, 6, 9. I think one was 12 of those guys. So for example, he sent the big block into my 30 thralls in the center of the board. They were there kind of like bait, but he sent them in. And in just one round of combat, he chugged through those thralls, took me down to like 12 thralls. They got their swing backs and did a bunch of damage, but by gosh, those things wrecked face in the middle of the board. Nonetheless, it was a learning game, so I didn't play too hard and went back and forth. Bill basically had me on my back feet, almost tabled down to a couple units, and then turn three hit. And that going first on my turn and his turn, I was able to spin the game the other way and pulled off a small victory there. So it was a super fun game against the Beasts of Chaos. That's the first time I've had a chance to play against those, like the Bulgors and all of that kind of stuff. What about you, Alex? Have you ever played against some Beasts of Chaos, seen those Bulgors on the board?
Yeah, you know, our Jeremy and I, our good friend Kyle, he has a Beast of Chaos army. He is actually also a resident Sylvaneth player. He's traditionally a Sylvaneth player. He tried his hand at Beast of Chaos. He's a really good player, but he's not a fan of the army. He doesn't think it's a very good one. And quite frankly, I don't necessarily disagree with him at all. It is a
underpowered army. I kept asking Bill. I said, "Yeah, where's your reroll charge mechanics? Where's your doing mortal wounds on the charge?" There was a little bit of stuff, but there just didn't seem to be any like juicy, this is going to mess you up mechanics in that army. So,
really, when it comes to the Beasts of Chaos army, it is based around the heroes a lot, but you have to almost completely build your list depending on the like what small selection of heroes you take. So like Kyle does bring Bulgors, he brings them with Zangor Enlightened, a big group of Zangor Enlightened right behind them, but he's got to have the Doom Bowl in that army because the Doom Bowl gives rerolls and aura buffs to the Bulgors. So it's a really expensive hero paired with a really expensive unit, and the rerolls are okay. I mean, it's still a unit of with a 5-up save, but right. They do have quite a few wounds. But they have to be wholly within 6 inches of the Bulgor or of the Doom Bowl. So they're basically hugging the Doom Bowl at all times if you have a big unit of Bulgors. That's just the way it's going to have to be.
And we all know how tough that can be. Is what happens inevitably is you charge your big unit in and you're left, you know, trailing one guy or two guys behind trying to maintain that aura with the character.
Yeah, it can get real rough real quick. Garrett, what are just some of your thoughts on Beast of Chaos?
Yeah, I tend to agree as far as like being the most competitive, pick up and table your opponents, or, you know, like you're going to have a decent, easy time at a tournament. Beasts of Chaos are definitely probably not the army to go for. I do think that they are a interesting army that has, they like, as John said, they're missing like that one last piece to like really take them over the top, but they are a good army, as in they're not like absolute trash, that I think you can play your way into more wins than losses, but you're going to be playing an uphill battle probably most of your games. Like the Bestigors are good, and with the benefits of +3 movement from the Shaman, they got some decent spells, they got ambush mechanics, but they do feel like they're missing some sort of overarching theme to tie the whole army together and get right. they're missing one thing. They feel like they're almost a full army.
Right? That is a great, great description of what it felt like to play against it. It was like, wow, there's some good stuff here. I see some nice elements. There's just didn't seem to be that mechanic to tie them together. It's what I might call a general's army, right? Where the army itself doesn't have the mechanics to carry you across the board. So if you're winning, you won based on your generalship.
Yeah. Or you could just play Zinch and just, you know, spam the most efficient unit and go with that.
Well, you would have to play a Zinch heavy army for this. I really can't see it going any other way. But, you know, they're definitely an army that I see has some potential in it.
I so, like yeah,
nonetheless,
the theme
it was good. It was good to play against Bill. Like I said, I think both of you know Bill, and if his 40K armies are any indication, everything he puts on the table looks amazing. And these guys were just fresh built, but I'm sure, given a little bit of time, these things are going to look pretty amazing too.
Perfect. Perfect. Great. Well, then, you know, on my workbench, I don't have a lot, you know, still slowly working on some Chaos Knights. Had a lot of, you know, big kind of things that I've been up to, so I haven't really been able to jump into a lot of hobbying per se. But
Really? What have you been up to there, Alex? I mean, you just seem like such a sedate guy, just a homebody sitting around the house doing nothing, hanging out by yourself. So what could you have been up to?
Well, I got engaged.
All right. Congratulations.
Not tied the knot. Made a prelude to the knot tying. With my partner. So,
you know, and she said yes, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, hence getting engaged. You know, there is an implication that he.
Well, you know, I mean, when I consider how awesome Alex's SO is, and then I know Alex. I mean, to me, it wasn't a guarantee. So I'm glad that she's gonna put up with his flaws and still accept him.
Oh, well, I'll send you the video later. It's really funny. You know, before she even says yes, she looks around to. You know, our friends and family who are there, and just goes, "You guys knew," and then turns around and says, "Yes." I'm like, "Okay,
nice." Now, I understand she had a little something to say to you afterwards. She said, "Until you beat Le Bogeyman, you don't get none of this." Is that what's going on?
God, that is definitely not what happened. Jesus. Oh man, I would that would be very bad news for me. you know, I am also enjoying a nice glass of Glenlivet 12. So,
ooh, you know, nice.
Enjoying some whiskey while we have our time today.
And I feel bad that I didn't break out my Glenlivet 12. We could have been whiskey buddies for the evening.
Well, John, you are famous for your not your papa's grappa, so you have a reputation to uphold.
Fair. It's good stuff. Maybe I'll save you the last sip here for you.
There we go. Well, that's all that's necessarily on my workbench. Gonna have to get some games in with Jeremy now that he's back in the States. But as we did mention, you know, we do have a lot to cover today. And first and foremost, we want to jump in and take a little bit of a closer look at some announcements that have been made recently about, you know, the two War Scrolls that are upcoming, the War Scrolls of recycled units, so to speak, the Orc War Clans, and the Cities of Sigmar. Now, the Orc War Clan information is still a little bit more of a slow trickle, but we got a lot of information in a faction focus recently regarding the Cities of Sigmar in particular. And, you know, there's a lot for us to talk about here, and there's a lot for us to look into, but, you know, it is, it has been confirmed that this is an army with no new releases. They're not getting a terrain piece. They're not getting a model, a new model, a new hero, at least not yet. But, you know, there's going to be some stuff that we, you know, want to look into. But before we dive into that, we do want to take a look at a event that happened. You know, there weren't that many events recently. There were a few small events here and there. But we do want to take a look at a larger event that was actually in Norway. So, you know, we wouldn't be the Wide World of Wargaming without that. And, you know, the event that was in Norway was the King in the North 2019 Grand Tournament. It was in Troms, Norway. I know that in BCP it is spelled T-R-O-M-S, but I know that in reality it is T-R-O with a horizontal line through it, M-S. Now, not actually sure how you pronounce that, so I'm going to say Troms until I am corrected.
Yeah, I think that the slash through it is the same as the slash above it for us.
Got it. Okay. And, you know, with this event, there were a lot of there was a fun spread. It seemed interesting to me that, you know, different areas, different regions, you know, both within the United States, UK, and everywhere else, there's going to be different kind of meta shifts too. And, you know, with this one, it seems like there's a pretty wide spread. I mean, in the top five alone, we have, destruction, death, and order. Really, the only thing that stands out to me significantly is that there's a complete lack of chaos. I mean, you don't see a chaos player until 10th place. And even then, I only see a Nurgle, one Nurgle player and a couple of Blades or like three Blades of Khorne players. So no Heed Knights, no Ever Chosen, no Beasts of Chaos, nothing else. For this, first, second, and third were Fire Slayers, Gloomspite, and Legion of Night. However, John, taking a look at the results of this tournament, what were some of your thoughts that you can gather?
Sure. So we have the King in the North 2019 put on by the Frost Lords up in Norway, and they described their event as the world's northernmost AOS tournament. Like right there, I'm already in. Like that's pretty amazing. And, you know, as I look down the folks who win, it's a funny thing. If I consider the armies that are missing, then this is not a surprising a turnout for the event. Like when you actually look at who competed, just lists, not knowing any of these people, this is not too surprising. I mean, yeah, we do have, what can you say, you know, Maggotkin all the way down at the end there, 22nd and 24th. And as you noted, we have Blades of Khorne sitting there in 10th place. But then, you know, if we look at the meta, there's a whole lot of Legion of Night. We've got Nagash. We got a whole, you know, Flesh Eater Quartz. We got all that kind of stuff going on. And then we have Fire Slayers. And I'm not going to make some kind of a northern meta comparison. Yeah, I am. This is actually, like, if I was to sit down and in my mind think of what I might expect in a northern Scandinavian tournament, I might actually expect to see, I'm even surprised to see the Nurgle there at all. You know what I'm saying? I would expect to see like Stormcast and Fire Slayers and Dwarves and Elves and all that kind of stuff that kind of comes out of the mythology of the Great North. So I would think that folks up there would be super into that. Now, as far as the lists themselves go, of course, number one, Luca Tosato, I'm going to butcher the names, dude, but have fun with them. I'm going to go for every name. I'm going to let Alex kind of go back about that one. I wanted to take a minute to look at second place, Stein Gardner, with his Gloomspite Gits, having just played against Anthony Webb and his Gloomspite a couple weeks ago. I got these guys on our mind. And as I look at this list, I'll tell you what, I don't know how well it plays. Well, I do. He took second place, right? But when I thought about doing Gloomspite, this is the army that I wanted to build. In fact, I'm still tempted to pick up some of these models. He's got the Scuttle Boss on the Giant Spider. He's got the Web Spinner Shaman on the Arachnarok Spider. He's got another Shaman on a Spider. He's got three units of five Spider Riders. And then the rest of the stuff is, you know, Shootas and Loon Smashes and all the other stuff that you need to fill in the list. And then he's got some more Spider Riders, right? Oh, man. And even the battalion is the Spider Rider Skitter Mob. To me, this just looks like a fun list. I wish I could see pictures of it. Hopefully it's painted amazing. There's lots of hobby opportunities and just the creepy factor. You start laying those spiders on the table. Hell, half the people are going to be, nope, nope, nope. I don't want none of that. and they're going to run away. So that was kind of the thing that caught my eye the most there was Mr. Steingartner with his second place Gloomspite gets. What about you, Alex? What kind of caught your eye over there? What was interesting to you?
Well, I do got to say, I do enjoy how you skipped the first place person. You know, congratulations on Luca for the win, but your list literally just says Fire Slayers. So
I think it speaks for itself. Fire Slayers. What more do you want to know?
There are some platforms that still don't think Fire Slayers are all that good, so I still get a kick out of that.
I think he's describing that there's only one good build in the entire tome, and it's basically the list that Jeremy ran. We can go with that.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's several different variations of that that will do very well, but I wouldn't necessarily say that there's one list to rule them all, but, you know, there's definitely one that does a lot better than others, certainly. Or again, you know, one primary one, you know, you want those 30 Hearthguard Berserkers, you want, you know, maybe some smaller squads of Volkites, whether it's, you know, 2 units of 10 or a unit of 5 and a unit of 15 or some other variation thereof. Hey, great for you. You know, it's a good idea.
Right. And but, so that's what I'm saying is you know what the list is going to be. It's some minor variation on that theme. The guy won the tournament, so he probably didn't bring something radically different from that.
Yeah, probably right. And you know, there is this skipping ahead, since you definitely talked about the Gloomspite list. Actually, before going into third place with the Gloomspite list, I do gotta say I have fought against the shamans on Arachnarok's spiders before. I mean, I've only fought against one of them.
Oh, what was it like?
Oh man! Well, not only are they gorgeous models, you know, right. They're a model that came out near the latter parts of Warhammer Fantasy, and it's a gorgeous model, and it's intimidating. But I don't know. Last time I fought against a Gloomspite player that wasn't Jeremy, I fought against one, and it was just super tough. You know, its fangs do mortal wounds, you know, and it's got several attacks. You know, of course, it's a wizard because there's a shaman on top. And, you know, it does have some guys on top with some pokey sticks. You know, it does have a few other abilities related to its, you know, its legs.
Yeah, being a big giant spider, right?
Yeah, exactly. But there's, you know, quite a bit here in terms of, you know, just kind of scariness with its fangs in particular. You know, its fangs, and, you know, I'm just trying to give myself a bit of a refresher right now. There are no joke. They do a lot of, or they have the potential to do a lot of mortal wounds. Now, with the Arachnarok spider in particular, let's just double check this here. The Arachnarok spider's monstrous fangs. This is the big one for it. You know, it's got a rule called spider venom, and an unmodified hit roll. If it's a 6, the attack inflicts D3 mortal wounds on the target, and the attack sequence ends. So instead of, you know, say frightful touch, where a 6 just becomes 1 mortal wound, no, it is in fact going to be D3 mortal wounds. And when I fought against my opponent it was at the Forge, GT in Spokane, he could not stop rolling 6s only for his fangs. So his fangs were consistently doing several D3 mortal wounds every single time.
Oh, so, wow, that could be pretty nasty, actually.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, on the big boy, you know, with the Ragnarok spider with the shaman or the web spinner shaman, you know, that's 4 attacks. And,
yeah, 4 attacks, and they start off hitting on 2s and then wounding on 3s. So that can be pretty tasty. Now, it's unfortunate though that the attack sequence ends and it does the D3, as so many things nowadays do the mortal wounds and then the attack sequence goes on.
That's I think a very common thing among books of the Gloomspite age, where Gloomspite is similar to the Beasts of Chaos book. It was released, I believe, it was the book after Beasts of Chaos in sequence. I don't think there's anything in between. And so it was one of those books where people kind of came out and were like, this is a good book. You know, they weren't scared of it. It didn't come out and like do anything crazy. And it's the kind of book where I was like, I like the level of balance in this book. It's nothing that's going to turn heads and cry foul. And I think that's, again, it's one of those, it has the weaker versions of mechanics where instead of in addition to it does end the attack sequence and stuff.
That's actually a good point you make there, Garrett. Yeah, yeah, I could see that. It just tones down the edge a little bit. And it's funny when you talk about the good book, there are, you know, if we take the top, you know, the best of the best, the crackiness stuff out of there, in the middle of Age of Sigmar, there are a whole lot of armies, a whole lot of battle tomes, a whole lot of builds that are actually really very balanced relative to each other. In fact, even looking at like all the armies that came to this particular tournament, I'll be honest with you, most of the people here probably had pretty good battles, pretty good rounds, all five games. You know, there wasn't too much craziness there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that does bring us to our third place winner. And I actually want to take this over to Garrett because, of course, it was his army. It was a Legion of Night. And as John mentioned, there are quite a few Legion of Night players at the event itself. You know, it's, you know, taking a look again at the widespread of players available at this type of event.
Well, Land now, of Gothrock and all.
So yeah, I will say,
I actually misspoke. My apologies. I did misspeak. There's a Night Haunt and there is a Legion of Grief, and then there's Legion of Night and a Grand Host. So there's death armies, but there aren't several Legion of Night armies. But yeah, Garrett, take us away with our third place winner. Take us away with Stu West.
I was about to say, I think this is the one army I'm glad I get to say because I won't butcher it. Stu West.
I don't think that's how they actually would pronounce it.
Probably not. I probably butchered it. I'm sorry, Stu West. It's I think what a lot of Legion of Night armies are being molded into, honestly. Death March and Legion of Night is just great because the bait giving you +1 save while you're in your own territory is great for giving those skeletons a 5+ save. So rend 1 attacks, you still get a 6+ save. Against no rend attacks, you all of a sudden have a 4+ save. So it really increases the defensiveness of all your skeletons a lot. The White King goes to a 2+ save in your territory, so he's great to be your general. Although he did have a zombie dragon, which, you know, Vampire Lord and Zombie Dragon, Ethereal Amulet, always a great add. I've not particularly been a fan when I've used it, but I did start with Manfred, and so the damage output of it was just lacking to me. But I have seen a lot of success from people with it, and it is a super tough guy that is with Ethereal Amulet, so he's just not going anywhere. But yeah, after that, it's he does have 4 Morgas Harbingers with Spirit Halberds and a minimized Death March list, actually. So he did go for a more punchy list as opposed to just spamming skeletons covering the board and being tough. The Morgas Harbingers and Legion of Night are brutal. I used them extensively when I was first playing Legion of Night without Death March. The 3d6 charge with the ambush is an incredibly powerful mechanic. The Spirit Halberds hit really hard. I have found that they tend to drop faster than you want them to, and it's 400 points. So with a 4+ save, no immune to rend, and six wounds apiece, but it's just they die really fast against target. Like any rend one, they'll just crumble away, and you'll see them disappear quickly. So that's why I've stopped running them, but they do hit hard. They are swingy though, with only having three attacks apiece. So
well, they will be getting good, though.
It's a glass hammer classic there.
Yeah, but I mean it's a swinging glass hammer because at 3 attacks apiece that do 3 damage a swing, they can do a lot of damage. But if you don't get your threes off, like I've had it where it's just like, oh, 2 go through and you do 6 damage, it's like great.
They only have 3 attacks if you choose to give them the halberds,
which they do have the halberds.
Okay, yeah.
The halberds are the better option, in my opinion, because you get that necessary rend 2 in your army. Between Graveguard and Skeletons, you honestly don't need the rend 1. That rend 2 tends to do better.
Yeah, no, and Death Armies don't have too much rend 2 to really distribute, so exactly. Being able to utilize that is going to be very helpful, and the 2-inch range on top of that. But we do know that, you know, it is... It is a unit that I really love. I love Morgas Archai specifically. And it is unfortunate that they are kind of invalidated by the amount of good range and good high AP value that exists. Mm-hmm. And they don't really, there are six wounds, but when there's two of them for, when there are 100 points a model,
yeah,
that's a little rough.
If the Archai save was not just mortal wounds, if it was wounds and mortal wounds, I'd be much more attracted to the Archai. But since it's only mortal wound damage, it's really hard for me to say that that's worth it over a 3d6 inch charge.
Well, do remember that, you know, just in 1 month, we are going to get the Ossark Reaper book, and that is going to have an overhaul to not just Nagash and Arkhan, but also give us a revised war scroll for the Morgas as well.
Oh, can you hear the hope in young Alex's voice as he talks about that?
I can. If Morgas do get a nice, necessary overhaul, I do feel that they're too simplistic for how cool the model is, honestly. If they do get that overhaul to make them a little more interesting for what the model is, the size and the point sink you're putting into them, I will definitely crack those bad boys out and pop them right back into my Legion of Night list.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would just see them going down in points. Just make them like
180,
you know, 100. Yeah. Yeah. 180.
Yeah. That's reasonable.
Realistic.
So 90 points.
A year ago they were what? 240. Oof. So
220.
220. Still not worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe like a healing mechanic is useful, is helpful, like just to heal some wounds. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. A healing mechanic would help them a ton because, well, even then, if you take seven wounds, then healing would just heal that one wound. They're just really odd. If they had a 3-up save, oof, I'd pay like 260 for them if they had a 3-up save. I mean, they're heavily armored, big dudes. Like, it's one of those things where it's like the moment you go to a 3-up save, I'd be willing to pay a premium and be like, screw that, like 3-up save, I'm like all in. It's just, I just feel like
they're too fragile. Yeah, getting to a 3-up save in AOS, though, those are our specific, you know, big characters, specific super hard units. There's not a huge amount of 3-up saves.
I just feel like Morgas,
outside of Stormcast, right?
I feel like Morgas could fit that bubble, though, because they're big, they're heavily armored, they're badass. I feel like they're elite enough that they deserve a 3-up save like Fulminators or something. But
we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, yeah, and we consider, you know, squishy Eidneth elves and characters there are, you know, like fives and such. So, yeah, four, you know, maybe something with a little bit more army, right? Naked guys are five, so a little bit of armor, maybe a four. And actual armor, like a three, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and these guys are definitely, well, not only are they, you know, heavily armored, but also, you know, their bodies are made up of molded bone, you know, reconstructed bone. So, yeah. We'll definitely have to see what they end up doing with, you know, with those units. And, you know, they're great on paper. They used to be way more effective, but, you know, just with time, things started getting a lot deadlier in the game. And, you know, it made it harder and harder to really keep them going in the way that you could before. Yeah. Now, you know,
Aox, just real quick, did you see the name of the ninth place player who was playing Stormcast?
Yeah, Captain Awful.
Captain Awful. Now that might actually be a common Norwegian name and we're mispronouncing it, but I don't think so. I think that was somebody having some fun.
Yeah, Captain Awful brought Gavriel and few other characters and a lot of hunting hounds. Real interesting.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, some skinks too, because why not?
He sounds like he might even be the captain of Awful.
And of course, playing in the Fjordhammer team. Some of these team names are pretty awesome. Fjordhammer. Well, actually, most of these guys are Fjordhammer.
Frostlords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drittung.
A bunch of idiots.
A bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of hope some of these guys would make it out to an LVO one day. I'd love to meet these guys.
Njal Klifkas. Yeah. Nice. A bunch of idiots. I like it. I applaud you and your Iron Jaws list, sir.
Exactly. Well, congratulations again on the winners of that event. You know, did look like it was a really good event. And again, it's great to see a good spread of players and actually a good spread of destruction players between, yeah, Beast Claw Raiders, Iron Jaws, Gleam Sprite. You know, it's I'm happy to see that still being present across, you know, other events here. So
the glorious far north meta.
Exactly.
The northern glorious, north meta.
Glorious north meta. Fjord meta.
Fjord meta.
Ooh, yes.
Yes, very, very fancy. Very exclusive. Now, you know, going back to something we had talked about at the beginning of this episode, there's this battle tome. You know, of course, it is, you know, a free peoples plus elves, you know, all faction of elves that are not, you know, having their own unique battle tome, and Duradin, you know, and dwarves all combined into one army. And of course, this is Cities of Sigmar. And as we talked about at the start of this episode, you know, they did go through a Games Workshop and give us a bit of a faction focus, a preview, if you will, regarding some of the main aspects of this army, and that there are just a bunch of models that are going to be in the army, because it's all recycled models from previous releases, primarily everything from End Times or earlier that is still a model that they sell. Now, you know, they even mention themselves that it's going to be anything from, you know, units like Free Guild, you know, Free Guild Cities, Iron Weld Arsenal, Order Serpentis, Dispossessed, Wanderers, Shadow Blades, Collegiate Arcane, Phoenix Temple, so on, so on. We could go keep on going on for like dozens of keywords here. And they even mentioned that certain units that disappeared, or I think they disappeared, the Sorceress and the Black Dragon is back. Now, I think maybe just the on-foot Sorceress was removed during during the General's Handbook. I could be mistaken, though.
It was just the on-foot Sorceress that was removed.
Okay, okay. Good to know. And, you know, they mention and they really try to specify the fact that there is, as they as they verb it, a ridiculous amount of battle line units in this book. And, you know, it is a lot. There are 30 separate battle line units in this, you know, in this battle tome that's upcoming. And, you know, they do mention that potentially these need to be unlocked through specific generals for them, but there are a few unique ones. And John, can you tell us about some of the outliers for yourself?
Some of the outliers, that's a great way to put it. That's really what I would call this entire release for me. I mean, first off, I'm excited to see Cities of Sigmar, mostly because Free Peoples is one of those still played but kind of broken because it falls in between the rules army. So we'll get those scrubs back in line. I'm talking to you, Reese. So after the A, I'm just saying, you know, there's plenty of battle tomes when you're playing something without a battle tome. Not going to convince me that that's your long living dream. Yeah, you're a power player. It's all good, but we know what's going on. So anyway, so as far as that goes, it's nice to see all this stuff tied together. In fact, I'd like to see more and more of that, where if you own some old fantasy model, looking right at you, Tomb Kings, you know, maybe you still get to play it in the modern era. As far as 30 battle lines, pretty amazing. Looking at all this stuff here. You know, the thing is, I myself really do not play any of these armies, nor have they particularly caught my interest directly. And I say directly because since they haven't had battle tomes, they really haven't caught my eye in Age of Sigmar. But these are all the armies that did catch my eye back in fantasy days. You know, we're talking high elves, white lions, we're talking normal dwarves. These are all things that I really like. The idea of a cool Hydra is pretty cool. It's funny, I don't own a lot of fantasy models, but way back in 1998, I was actually in a Dungeons & Dragons campaign. It's not where I met my wife, Donna, but it's certainly where we got to know each other. And as part of that, I was playing a ranger elf character, and I tamed myself a griffin. And so I built the Carl Franz Griffin model, and sitting right here in my display case is my Spiffy the Griffin from back in the day. And I'm looking at this new Carl Franz Griffin model, and I could see myself building one of those and kind of seeing what I could do nowadays with a lot more painting experience under my belt than what I was able to accomplish 20 years ago. So as far as that goes, I think that there's some fun stuff here. But as far as a playable army for me, not a whole lot. I think you guys know I do play Stormcast Eternals, or at least I own them. So I'm hoping that this is going to be a place where I can take my Stormcast and then grab a few cool order units, like maybe some White Lion Chariots, maybe a Hydra, maybe a Carl Franz on a Griffin, and back them up with some Stormcast and go to town. And if that's all possible, I'll be honest with you, I do kind of like some of the dwarf units too, maybe a dwarf hero. In other words, it kind of opens up some fun hobby possibilities, and then maybe I get to play with those models as well. And that's kind of what I have, it has me excited about this new list. Not that I'm going to build a new army, but maybe build a model or two. We'll see how that goes. What do you think, Garrett? I mean, are you going to do anything with this, or is this going to tie together some random units you own? Do you own a cool black dragon or something like that?
Well, as far, I kind of was moving across the country and moving into my new houses, and so I kind of went through purges of a lot of my old models. I did own a lot of Phoenix Guard, got rid of them, had a bunch of Dark Elves, got rid of them.
I have a bunch of those bits.
Well, I actually just kind of got rid of all of them. So I don't actually have anything that I would use in this army in particular. As far as what I think on a lot of the battle line here, I am really intrigued by the Charybdis in general, because they say that you need specific generals to unlock them. And obviously the big baddies are going to require them. And I'm interested if the Charybdis is going to be roped in with the Hydra, or if it's going to be, if there's a different general. I'm really, there's a lot of interesting battle line in here that I'm wondering which general would make them. And also, I'm really excited for the themes of some of them, like the Cold One Knights. I've loved their models forever. My brother had a whole army of them, but they were kind of lackluster in Age of Sigmar, and it was just kind of like, eh. But now that they're getting a revamp in Cities of Sigmar, I'd be really interested to see what some of these cavalry units get as far as updates go to make them get that oomph they need to be a competent cavalry unit. Because I feel like that's one of the issues we had in Age of Sigmar with a lot of these older cavalry units. They didn't have that same oomph that you wanted from a cavalry unit until the later stuff. So
yeah, cavalry should be terrifying. Getting charged by a unit of cavalry should be terrifying.
So I'm really excited to see what they do with a lot of these battle line cavalry units to really revamp them and bring them forward into the current modern rule set that we have. That's probably the most excited thing I am about this book, is modernizing a wide berth of units. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, well, you know, when it strictly comes to the battle line here, first of all, I agree, and I think everyone agrees, that it's just exciting to get a revamped version of all these units that they already have. Units that, this means that your friend who's got a bunch of old Empire minis or a High Elf army, you can't, and who's just going like, well, I don't really want to play AOS because I just, my army doesn't have new rules yet, and they have too much self-respect to play Ninth Age, then, you know, definitely they have a chance now. They have their shot to jump right in. With the battle line units, there are a lot that really stand out here. The first of which is the Demigryph Knights for me. You know, those are the heavy armored, knights, and they are on Demigryphs. They're a pretty cool model. It's a model from End Times. I'm looking at the Cold One Chariots. Those are pretty unique as well. A big one that stands out is, again, the Hydra, the Charybdis, and the Steam Tank.
Oh, yeah.
Almost certain that the Steam Tank is going to be a real fun one to see. You know, even the article themselves in the preview, Games Workshop even says, you know, you might see an entire army of steam tanks.
What?
So, yeah, maybe we can get our good 40K host, Vince, to jump on the bandwagon and start his armored company, but for AOS.
Man, yeah, playing all tanks in AOS, that'll pull some people.
Yeah, you know, I know he'll be listening to this episode, so this is his challenge. Do it. Do it, Vince. I dare you. You won't. You won't.
If the flesh eater
that would work with him, by the way, just for the record.
I wouldn't.
If the Flesh Eater Court book is any indication, I'm guessing the steam tanks for Battle Line won't count towards your behemoth or artillery limit. So you could have, because that's what they did for Gristlegore, the behemoths you take as Battle Line don't count towards your behemoth limit. So they might do that so you can have a crap ton of steam tanks then.
That's true. That's true. I didn't think of that. That's going to be very helpful for this. And, you know, that would help for not just the steam tanks, but you know, the chariots too, I'm sure. And you know, we talked, you know, we may have brought this up in a few episodes back, just when we only had initial info regarding Free Cities, but you know, there's going to be quite a bit that we can look at in regards to the actual cities themselves. You know, each city, you know, I believe there's going to be 5 or 6 cities in the tome, and they're all going to have their own unique rules. But some of them give you access to armies that are in other battle tomes. And, you know, for the Storm Keeps, that is going to allow for Stormcast Eternals to actually be in the army itself. And then, you know, there's another one that we've talked about. Oh, we did talk about this in a previous episode about how the Tempest Isle forces will allow for overlords, and Living City allows for Sylvaneth units. So it's going to be cool that you can actually have this spread. So you can have actual, say, Kurnoth hunters with, you know, your army, and you don't have to worry about, you know, the ally limit, you know. So that'll be very helpful for just a lot of the order players in general, even the ones who may have had a fantasy army and then, you know, tabled it and or shelved it and started maybe a Sigmar army or a Sigmarite army or you know, a Sylvaneth one. Now they can go back and play a little bit more of a mixy match. But there's a little bit more here that they really wanted to dive into, specifically about some, you know, allegiance abilities, cities themselves, and what have you. But John, taking a look at some of the other previews that we've gotten here, is there anything that really excites you regarding some of these new rules?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the entire article, I mean, I assume that everybody dove through the article. And of course, we're going to have more and more coming out through the week. So even though we're recording now, by the time this is released, there will even be more info. So we know that's going to happen. But what I thought one of the neat things I saw was something talking about bodyguards in there. So I guess some of your elite heroes can establish like a bodyguard unit of some kind to take wounds or mortal wounds for them. So I'll be interested to see how the whole bodyguard mechanic works out, see if that's something that carries through to other armies or if that's going to be unique and specific to the cities here. And then also there's a little teaser, and I don't know exactly what it means, but it scares me. Okay, I can tell you it scares me a little bit.
I know where we're going with
this. You know where we're going with this. It says that when you cast endless spells with your Cities of Sigmar wizard, they're going to be empowered by their associated realm. And having played against the Purple Sun in its, quote, associated realm, holy crap, that thing becomes very frightening all of a sudden. And so, yeah, Purple Suns from Cities of Sigmar, no, thank you. Nope. Keep that away. Your wizard must die turn one, because I don't even want to meet your Purple Sun. So that, as soon as I read that sentence, I will admit I had a little pucker factor. And the immediate question I said to myself was, well, if you can't beat them, join them. Do I need to go ahead and do this to take advantage of the Purple Sun without having the Purple Sun take advantage of me? So that's kind of what I was going with on that one. What do you think, Garrett? Endless spells cranked up a notch, bodyguards. What else caught your eye over here?
Well, those are probably the two ones that caught my eye the most as well. I will say, though, that the Endless Spell one has me scared as well, but not so much for the Endless Spell rule itself. I do think there are a couple of abusable spells, like the Umbral Spell Portal.
The bridge.
Yeah, oh, the bridge. Yes. Those ones that kind of have some really weird rules when it comes to their empower thing is scary. But honestly, with how this is a very powerful rule, and it kind of has me scared for what other rules they have coming. Because that, if they are along this power level on such a wide berth of units, that really scares me for the number of abusable mechanics that can come out of this book. Like, they have so many units to their disposal that are getting hopefully a massive overhaul to modernize all of the rules. And so all the units are going to get better in general. They're all going to get modernized allegiance traits. They're all going to get, like, it's just going to have so many things. And the article itself says, "We're excited to see what new combos you guys come up with."
So that we can fack them down and get the game back under control.
Yeah, but like that just honestly scares me, that it's just like, there's so much that the rules designers themselves are just like, yeah, we're not even trying to balance everything. This is just going to be a ridiculous book. And so that's kind of what I'm most scared about. Honestly, from overall, in like how I feel about this book, I'm really happy that the entire line of units is kind of getting shoved into this book so that we stop having to worry about 17 new books to come out for order. We just be like, hey, people that work at the cities, you know, the Wanderers, the Dwarden, the Free People. Yeah, they work at the cities. That's what they are. They're the cities. We're not going to get a Wanderers book because guess what? The Wanderers are scouts for the cities. So I like that, but it's kind of like they don't feel like very Age of Sigmar armies. These are all the old world armies. And so I'm kind of like, fine, they got their book. Now people can hopefully shut up. Like I have a very unpopular opinion here, I know, but it's just like, I'm not happy with this book, but I'm also excited that we're finally going to get a massive modernization of the game.
So, I mean, what I just heard from you is you're kind of saying that this is a book written to satisfy all the old grognards, not really meant for anyone to build a new army, but if you got some old junk, shut up, play it, and move on.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Okay. Okay. Controversial point.
I'm a controversial person.
Oh, yeah. Certainly can be. Well, you know, it's definitely very interesting. And even taking a look at some of these additional rules, some of the things that you really elaborate and explore. I think that the Endless Spell, being able to utilize the realm bonus is huge. And, you know, making sure that you can add extra rules here can be pretty helpful too. You know, it's as an example, you know, taking a look at the, you know, mounted pistoliers, they have the hail of bullets rule. You know, after a unit can make a charge move, it can shoot with any braces, you know, pistol bracers that they're armed with. So they make a charge and then they shoot with their gun immediately. That is, you know, that's very helpful. And even looking at some of these, you know, actual city abilities too can be huge. I mean, the Iron Weld guilds, they allow for an additional Iron Weld artillery unit in your army to be allowed if you are playing just pitched battle, and you increase the range of their missile weapons by 3 inches. And they even mention combining that with a command trait that is reroll ones to hit for missile weapons wholly within 12 of the general, as long as the unit's not in combat, basically. So
I bet that could be pretty strong too. I could see a few places where that, I mean, those things already have decent range. So an extra 3 inches.
I will say I've been on the receiving end of those dwarf cannons with an engineer and some to hit buffs that I gaining an extra cannon, so I have 5 cannons to deal with, And then them just inherently rerolling ones to hit sounds absolutely terrifying. My hopes are is that a lot of the plus one to hit buffs, like the Celestial Hurricanum, they kind of get fixed so you don't have these like two hitting on twos, rerolling ones, wounding on two cannons that do D6 damage or two shots apiece. That sounds absolutely terrifying.
It is terrifying. But if you look at like the Drill Master here, by the way, that was my nickname when I was in the army. the Drill Master here, it is a command trait. So you're going to be burning those command points.
No,
so the real
command
thing
trait that'd be a command ability. Command trait is the, if he's your general. So it's just a flat aura.
Oh my gosh, you're right. That's just an aura. Oh, okay. Yeah, I misread that for a second. I was thinking that as long as you're spending command points on it, keep it under control. But no, he's just going to be rocking it all day, all the time. And, of course, our Drill Master is going to be combined with the new Bodyguard mechanic. So probably he's going to be minus one to hit. And then if you do hit him, he gets to pass off the wounds anyway. So, you might be eating a little bit of cannon fire before you take that down.
I foresee a one-dimensional negative play experience gunline list start popping up that'll just table a lot of people and create some really feel badsies.
Oh, wait. I thought that's what Free Peoples already was.
To an extent. But now it's going to be even worse since they have modernized rules and more buffs. And more artillery because you can take a fifth one. So,
I mean, what it comes down to, Garrett, you know, is like, how much faith do you have in GW and GW's playtesters to actually put something that on the surface seems this powerful, but when it actually hits the table will be, shall we say, in line or balanced with at least the 2019 meta. You know, I would only expect it to match the 2019 book.
Well, if it's anything like Slaanesh, then, I expect it to, if it is anywhere along the parallel of Slaanesh, that's,
Slaanesh, Fletch Eater Court, Skaven, all very strong books. If we crank up from there, then fuck the rest of this game. But if it at that level, then it again might take Slaanesh off its perch.
But taking Slaanesh off its perch also takes everyone else off their perch. Like, that's the problem, is that if you're better than top dog, you're just crushing everyone below him too. So you're just doing this arms race of who can just crush new book is Codex Creep all over again.
Right. Whereas what we really want to see is rock, paper, scissors. We want to see this new book crushes this other book, but then this other book crushes this one so that, you know, nothing has its guaranteed win for the day. It's like, depending on your matchup, depending on who you're playing, and depending on the quality of your dice and the generalship, anything can happen on any given day.
I'd prefer books that are similar to the Blades of Khorne, Beasts of Chaos, Gloomspite, Gitz, Sylvaneth line, where they have interesting mechanics. They're generally strong books, but nothing screams out as just, you know, Rafflefoss. You know, I don't like the Ropkeeper Sisters. I just Raffle Stomp, just like murder face. Like, no, if everything is kind of just like generally balanced and you actually just have to play yourself into a win rather than mechanically you either win or lose based off matchups, I'd much prefer that.
Sure. I mean, I'd like to say that's what everyone wants, but that's not what everyone wants. But to break this game down to generalship and at the moment of the game play versus pre-game play, which is list building and stuff, right? Because honestly, as much as we might say, oh man, you just brought that list that just kicked my butt. Well, building the list is part of the game. Building the models to build that list is part of the game. Painting the models to build that list is part of the game. Paying somebody to build the models and paint them for you is also part of the game. But either way, that preparation is part of the game. And arguably, I don't know about you guys, but I spend at least, 4-5 to 1 in this game of building, hobbying, preparing, reading, list making, thinking, talking, as opposed to rolling dice, playing the game. So most of this game for me happens before I hit the tabletop, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So strong list that does work on the table, that's an aspect of the hobby too. But I'm with you. I myself am more of a general. I like to come to the table. I actually like to have a list that maybe isn't the strongest list against my opponent who doesn't have the strongest list. And then both of us have to really work our list and work the mission to see who wins the day. And maybe with some crazy dice in between, right?
I would love to go more on this, but I hear Alex's just brainwaves of the Jeopardy clock. I think this is, might be a topic for another day, John, but yeah, no, I definitely have a lot I could say on that too.
Oh, I think that I already have several topics lined up where I can just basically let you guys go at it and just get some popcorn, get a nice drink, enjoy it. Maybe I'll live stream it if we can get you guys in the same room. You know, I'll just put like a knife in the middle of the table. We'll just see what happens. I don't know.
Ooh, I don't know. Garrett, I gotta ask you right now, Garrett. Have you ever done the thing where you put your hand on the table and stab the knife between your fingers?
Of course he hasn't.
not in probably the way you have. You know, I was a kid and we have played that game, but I've not actually played that game for real. You know, I've just faked it like a child does.
Not as a drinking game.
I've not done it as a drinking game, no.
Fair enough. Okay, fair. Whatever.
He's got more self-preservation than that.
I sat around and played video games as a child. I didn't really start drinking until I was 21. And
I didn't do that as a child, but I'm saying we all went to college. So
I was in a basement programming all college. I didn't go crazy.
Garrett was the indoor kid.
Fair. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anyways, Alex, any final thoughts on this book since we've gotten far off topic?
Far off topic, which, you know, that is not a bad thing. I definitely hope our listeners enjoy, you know, a break from the norm. However, I think it's interesting. You know, you talk to a lot of people online and you get mixed reactions. You get reactions like mine where I say, great, it's a new book and it helps those people, again, who either have these armies who have, or, you know, have these old fantasy armies who haven't been able to play them, or they have that buddy who's like a grognard who only wants to keep their 40K and they don't want to, you know, open their mind to AOS specifically because end times happened and their entire collection is no longer valid. This gives them the option to kick your friend in the ass and say, get at it. Come on.
I feel like you have a specific person in mind with that
sentence.
I have like
four specific people in mind. So I'm gonna do that real hard. I'm gonna get my kicking boots. But besides that, I think a lot of people are really like running for the hills on this one. I think I've talked to a lot of people who legitimately think that this is gonna like break the game, and I don't think it is. I think it's just gonna be, these units are going to have more synergy with each other and they're going to be easier to play because they're going to have better rules and they're going to have more tools in their toolbox. I don't think that it's going to be game breaking. I think that a good general with these types of armies, like a good general with like a Free Guild or Duradin gun line type of thing, is probably going to wreck face. But is it going to be the point where you can have an experienced player and then someone who's just like, this is my third week of AOS, and this new guy is just going to clobber the experienced player? I doubt it.
Slinish.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think it's going to be push button. I think it's going to be really helpful for the players who are experienced, who are building these armies right now in preparation. I don't think it's going to be OP.
I have something in defense of that. I kind of agree with you because I think ultimately the book is not going to be a radical change from how the armies currently play. Like people are talking about, you know, the bridge plus a big block of free people, free guild, musket men. But like, you can already do that.
It's a mixed order army that we see all the time.
So it's not like it's going to be a huge shift away from things that we can already see now. And those things aren't destroying the meta as is. So to your point, like, I am a little scared of this book, but again, as I think in defense of you, it is not going to probably radically change from what we have, and what we have isn't something to be totally scared of. So
I think that you're going to see a lot less of the mixed order lists that I've been seeing, which, you know, are I played several times at Nova, and, you know, one of which, of course, is our great and amazing co-host, Matthew. You know, he brought Eidoneth and Eternal Guard and Thralls. I think you're going to see a lot less of, like, the Eidoneth plus, and you're going to see a lot more of these, you know, specific cities. So you're going to see maybe Sigmar or Sigmarites or Overlords or Sylvaneth with said city, but with these other cities that may not have access to units from another battle tome, likely you're still going to see really strong combos. And yeah, I think that they are going to take full advantage of the bonuses for the endless spells, but I don't think you're going to see the same type of list at all. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you might have this crazy gun line, but it's still a bunch of, you know, Duradin or human artillery. It's still got, you know, crew that are have a 5-up save, you know, in one wound.
Well, hopefully they fix the crew rules with the new updates to make them in line with the Celestar Ballistas, because the old crew rules, being a judge at Nova, I can tell you, caused a couple of awkward rulings because it is weird. So hopefully they fix that up.
That's fair. John, any final thoughts?
No, just I will be watching the interwebs all week long. I'm kind of curious to see what else comes out. There was a cute little video if you watch some of the orc side of things too, so we're not really talking about it today, but there was some fun stuff as part of this release, not just the Cities of Sigmar faction focus. So all week long, it should be fun and good, and next time we talk, there'll be more stuff to say about it.
Yeah, and we are going to have a lot of fun really diving in and talking about the Orc War Clans as well. So, yeah, stay tuned, and we will be talking a lot about the new and upcoming releases, as we are going to have Orc War Clans, Cities of Sigmar, and, of course, next month in a completely new army. You know, that's just going to be ripe for the picking. So, in the meantime, feel free to like us on Facebook, review us on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Again, this is Alex, John, and Garrett signing off for the night.
Night, folks. Please do the reviews. Review us, please. Please, 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 please. Thank you.
Do it for John. He'll give you some, he'll give you a few sips of Not Your Papa's Grappa.
Oh, I will absolutely. No, I'll be out of your Papa's Grappa. Instead, I will have the fine barrel-aged grappa I'm importing from Italy to share with you.
Ooh, even better. Okay, perfect. Well, you guys, you heard it from him yourself. Get to it, and you'll get the benefit from John. So have a good night.
It's just the benefit.
It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.